Iran and the U.S. are not at war. Sometimes it's good to say that out loud to remind ourselves of that, because tensions between Washington and Tehran just keep escalating, statement by statement. Today, a top Revolutionary Guard official said Iran has ballistic missiles capable of hitting carriers at sea, a not-so-thinly veiled reminder to the U.S., which recently deployed an aircraft carrier to the Persian Gulf. Part of what the Trump administration says is a concerted effort to send a message to Tehran to back off. Here's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo earlier today.
We are there to deter aggression. President Trump does not want war, and we will continue to communicate that message while doing the things that are necessary to protect American interests in the region.
Meanwhile, Iran says it's just days away from stockpiling enough enriched uranium to exceed the limit set by the 2015 nuclear agreement, the same agreement the U.S. has already abandoned. To find out what this means for the region and the world, we reached out to Dennis Ross. He's a longtime U.S. diplomat who's advised presidents of both parties on Middle East policy.
My worry is that each side at this point thinks that they can keep everything within limits. Trump has come out and said he doesn't want war. The Supreme Leader came out and said there's not going to be a war. Each believes they understand the limits of the other, even at a time when they're not communicating directly. That in itself, I think, creates some risk of miscalculation.
Spin out a scenario for us in terms of miscalculating each other in this standoff.
So let's say that we've just seen again yesterday there were rockets fired by Shia militia proxies of the Iranians in Iraq that hit a base in Iraq where American forces are also present. Let's say, again, it's not the Iranians doing it directly, but they do everything indirectly or through in a way that they present as being deniable. But let's say they hit a base. One of the Shia militia's rockets hits a base and American forces, God forbid, are killed. Now, the administration then decides, okay, we're going to have to send a message back there. So we decide to go ahead and we decide to hit one of the training facilities for the Shia proxy forces that exist within Iran. What do the Iranians do then? Do the Iranians say, okay, they did it in a way that was designed to maybe limit our casualties, but they impose something? They have to see that there's a price for that. So maybe they do something with a small boat. One of the Revolutionary Guard's small boats that is designed, again, not to hit us, but maybe to do something a little bit more brazen against the ship. And what do we then do? Do we respond to that? Or maybe we have drones up and they've tried to shoot down drones. They shoot down an American drone. Do we then take out the small boat that was responsible for doing that? This is a tit-for-tat relationship where you can see things escalating. Each side may think that it's a slow-motion process of escalation, but once you begin it, it's not so easy to stop.
Are you confident that there is a single and unified policy toward Iran in the Trump administration?
No, I'm not. I mean, even today, we've had the Secretary of State pointing the finger at the Iranians, saying this is a challenge to the international community, saying this is a threat to international shipping. And today we had the president say these were minor incidents. So there's an inconsistency in terms of the messaging. The danger of sending mixed messages that way is that the Iranians may misread it and they may feel, fine, these are minor incidents. Maybe we can do a little bit more. But maybe what they do actually crosses a threshold quite apart from what the president may intend.
What is the way out of this current impasse with Iran?
Well, I do think the way out is start by internationalizing this. Because a threat to international shipping is an international problem. It's not solely an American problem. And recognize that there probably has to be a way to get back into discussions between us and the Iranians. Now, I would say, knowing where the Iranians are right now, a direct discussion with us will look too much like they gave in. My guess is if we're going to see a negotiation, it's probably going to start through a third party. The Japanese were not the right one from the Iranian standpoint. The Russians might be.
The Russians? Really?
Yes. Look, if you think about it, you can see Vladimir Putin presenting himself as an arbiter. He very much likes to be seen as the arbiter in the region. Here's a case where the Iranians would be inclined to trust him. Not a lot, but they would trust him more than anybody else being a go-between. And they probably also see that this is something that President Trump would respond to.
But would you, as a diplomat, trust Vladimir Putin to be the intermediary?
He wouldn't be my choice. I would much prefer to see the French, ironically, even the Chinese, because the Chinese have a stake in avoiding any real escalation. You know, from a Russian standpoint, they don't mind having things heat up first and then coming in to rescue the situation. Having things heat up first could increase and inflate the price of oil. That's in the Russian interest. That's not in the Chinese interest.
Longtime U.S. diplomat Ambassador Dennis Ross, he's advised presidents of both parties on Middle East policy. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.